All right, let's dive right in. We all know the phrase one person, one vote.
Absolutely, a cornerstone of a representative democracy.
But when you really dig into constitutional law, it's amazing how complicated even those super basic ideas can become.
Yeah, the theory is often a lot simpler than the practical application.
Exactly. So today we're looking at a case, Tennant v. Jefferson County Commission, and it really digs into how messy this all gets when we're talking about drawing congressional districts. It's kind of a perfect example of how constitutional law bumps up against the realities of politics.
Right, and it raises all sorts of questions about what equal really means when you try to translate that ideal into actual districts on a map.
For law students especially, this case is essential.
It really is.
And what's so fascinating about Tennant is that it starts with a really tiny problem.
Right.
After the 2010 census, West Virginia had to redraw its congressional districts. You know, the usual redistricting stuff.
Right.
But the thing is, the population in West Virginia had only shifted by about 1.5% across the whole state.
That's not a lot of movement, so you'd think the redistricting wouldn't be too dramatic.
Exactly. And because of that, the difference in population between the biggest and smallest proposed districts was minuscule, only 0.79%. Think about that, in a state with, what, about 1.8 million people.
We're talking about a difference of roughly 3,000 people between the largest and smallest districts.
Exactly.
That's a rounding error in a lot of contexts.
You'd think that wouldn't even be worth mentioning, right?
Yeah.
But Jefferson County thought otherwise. They took the issue to court, claimed that even that 0.79% difference violated the one person, one vote idea.
That's the principle in Article 1, Section 2 of the Constitution, which says members of the House have to be chosen by the people of the several states.
And to everyone's surprise, the district court actually agreed with them.
Yeah, that's where it gets interesting.
So that's what we're going to unpack today. How did a seemingly insignificant difference in population end up as a Supreme Court case?
Right.
What were the legal arguments on both sides? And what did the Supreme Court ultimately decide about how far states can go when drawing these districts?
Because this wasn't just about those few thousand people in West Virginia, the decision has implications for how redistricting happens across the country.
This deep dive uses Tennant as a lens to examine how the Supreme Court tries to balance the ideal of perfectly equal representation with the very real challenges of actually dividing up a state into districts.
Exactly. So to understand the Supreme Court's decision in Tennant, we have to look back at the legal framework that guides these kinds of cases. Specifically, we need to talk about Karcher v. Daggett, a 1983 case that set a really important precedent.
Okay, Karcher v. Daggett. What's the key takeaway from that case that's relevant to Tennant?
Well, Karcher established a two-pronged test that courts use to figure out whether a state's redistricting plan violates that one person, one vote principle. The first part of the test says that whoever's challenging the plan in Tennant, it was the Jefferson County Commission, they have to show that the population differences between districts could have been avoided.
So they can't just say, hey, these districts have different populations. They have to prove there was a practical way to make them more equal.
Exactly. They have to demonstrate that the state had other options, other ways to draw the map that would have resulted in districts with populations that were closer to each other. If they can show that, if they can prove that the state could have drawn a more equal map, then the burden shifts to the state.
Okay, and what does the state have to prove at that point?
That's the second part of the Karcher test. The state has to justify the population differences, explain why they're necessary. The Supreme Court's phrasing in Karcher is that the state has to show those population differences were, quote, necessary to achieve some legitimate state objective.
Legitimate state objective sounds pretty broad. What kind of things fall under that?
Right, it is a little broad. And the court in Karcher didn't try to create an exhaustive list, but generally, we're talking about objectives that are not partisan, you know, not about giving one party an advantage over another.
Okay.
They're about how a state organizes itself geographically and politically. Things like respecting the boundaries of existing counties or cities, trying to keep what are called communities of interest together. Those are groups of people with shared interests or backgrounds.
So a state might want to keep a community that's largely dependent on, say, agriculture all in one district rather than splitting them up.
Exactly. Or, you know, a community with a shared cultural heritage. And something that was argued in Tennant avoiding situations where two incumbent members of Congress end up having to run against each other in the same district.
I can see how a state might want to avoid that. So going back to Tennant, the district court agreed with Jefferson County, saying even that tiny 0.79% variance was avoidable and that West Virginia's reasons for having it weren't good enough. But the Supreme Court reversed that decision, right?
Yes, unanimously.
So what was the Supreme Court's reasoning? Where did they think the district court went wrong?
Well, there were a couple of big points. First, the Supreme Court felt like the district court had taken the Karcher standard too far. They basically said the lower court was demanding precise mathematical equality, when that's not what the Constitution requires.
They said the standard is as nearly as is practicable, not perfectly equal populations in every single district.
Right. And the Supreme Court emphasized that some level of population difference is almost inevitable in redistricting. The Constitution doesn't expect absolute perfection. You know, it's not an all or nothing standard.
So a little wiggle room is okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about reaching some theoretical ideal of perfectly balanced populations.
Exactly. And that leads to the second major point the Supreme Court made. They said the district court didn't give enough weight to the decisions made by the West Virginia legislature.
Meaning the court shouldn't second guess every single decision a state legislature makes about redistricting, right?
Right. Redistricting is inherently a political process. It's the job of the legislature, not the courts, to draw those lines. The Supreme Court was basically saying, look, we presume the state is acting in good faith. We're not going to micromanage every tiny population difference unless there's a clear reason to think something is wrong.
So the courts aren't supposed to be drawing the maps themselves. They should step back unless there's a really clear violation of the Constitution.
Right. And the Supreme Court pointed out that West Virginia did have reasons, legitimate state objectives, for that 0.79% variance. They wanted to avoid those incumbent versus incumbent races.
Which, as we said, can be very disruptive.
Yeah. They also wanted to keep county lines intact as much as possible.
Because those county lines often represent real communities, right?
Right. Absolutely. They reflect shared histories, administrative structures, all sorts of things that tie a community together. And the state also wanted to maintain the core of existing districts so voters would have some degree of familiarity and continuity.
So the Supreme Court found all those reasons valid. They said, okay, even though you could theoretically make the districts a little more equal in population, these other goals are also important, and you've explained why.
Precisely. They concluded that the 0.79% variance was really quite small, especially considering those legitimate state objectives.
Right. It wasn't like they were just ignoring the population differences altogether.
Yeah.
The court acknowledged that West Virginia had considered other plans, but those plans often meant making bigger compromises on those other goals, like splitting up more counties or forcing more incumbents to run against each other.
The plan they chose wasn't perfect in terms of population balance, but it was a reasonable compromise. It achieved a decent balance between the ideal of one person, one vote, and those other practical and political considerations.
I think it's really interesting that the court specifically mentioned avoiding those incumbent races as a legitimate goal. I can see the argument for that. It promotes stability, avoids a lot of political infighting, but it also makes you wonder if that could protect incumbents too much, you know?
Yeah, it's one of those things where there are arguments on both sides. On one hand, you could say it helps prevent unnecessary disruption and keeps experienced lawmakers in office. But on the other hand, you could argue that it makes it harder for challengers to run and win, and that might not be the best thing for a healthy democracy.
Right, because you want voters to have choices. So it's a tough question, and legal scholars are still debating this.
It really shows how complicated this whole process is. There are always trade-offs involved.
Absolutely. And you mentioned technology earlier. We have such sophisticated mapping software now. Couldn't states achieve almost perfect population equality if they really wanted to? I mean, the technology is there. Did the Supreme Court address that in Tenet?
They did. The people challenging West Virginia's plan actually argued that very point. They said, look, with all the technology we have now, a 0.79% variance is way too big. You could get it down to practically zero if you wanted to.
But the Supreme Court didn't buy that argument, right?
Right. They said that just because we have the technology to do something doesn't mean the Constitution requires it. The standard is still as nearly as is practicable, and that means states have to make a good faith effort, but it doesn't mean they have to achieve perfect equality, even if it's technically possible.
So the court is saying we shouldn't let technology dictate how we interpret the Constitution.
Exactly. The goal is to have a reasonable balance, to take those other state interests into account. And in this case, the court decided that West Virginia's plan, even with that small variance, was reasonable.
So for our listeners, especially the law students out there who are really digging into this, what are the key takeaways from Tenet v. Jefferson County Commission? What are the most important principles to remember?
I think there are a few really big ones. First, the Supreme Court made it clear that as nearly as is practicable does not mean absolutely perfect population equality. Small variations are okay.
Right. And they reaffirmed that two-pronged test from Karcher v. Daggett.
Yes, that's still the framework courts will use in these cases. First, the challenger has to show that the population differences could have been avoided. If they can do that, then the state has to justify those differences with legitimate objectives.
And the Supreme Court accepted West Virginia's reasons. Avoiding incumbent contests, respecting county lines, maintaining those district cores as legitimate state objectives.
Right. And they decided that those objectives were enough to justify the 0.79% variance. That's a significant point because it shows that states do have flexibility when they draw these districts, and courts should generally defer to the state legislature's decisions.
Unless it's really clear that they're violating the Constitution, the courts should basically stay out of it.
Right. And I think the court's stance on technology is also crucial. They're saying we shouldn't automatically assume that just because we can achieve something with technology means we're required to do it.
That's a good point. The Constitution isn't a technology document. It's about principles.
Exactly. So Tenet is a reminder that redistricting is complicated. It's not just about crunching numbers and achieving perfect population equality. It's about balancing different interests and goals, and it's a process that states have the primary responsibility for.
Well, this has been a really fascinating deep dive into Tenet v. Jefferson County Commission. It really shows how tricky it can be to balance that fundamental idea of one person, one vote with the realities of politics and geography.
Absolutely. And Tenet reminds us that a lot of our constitutional principles require careful interpretation. What seems simple on the surface can be incredibly complex in practice.
And for all you law students listening, here's something to think about as you continue your studies. The Supreme Court really emphasized legitimate state interests in this case. So how do you think this precedent might be used, or maybe even misused, in future redistricting battles, especially when you have bigger population differences or when the state's objectives aren't quite as clear-cut?
It's something to keep in mind as you're learning about constitutional law, because the interpretation of one person, one vote is constantly evolving.
Absolutely. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.
It's been a pleasure.